Hello, hello everyone. It's Sonia here with the Sonia Janice Show. And welcome to my abode. Welcome to this little container of time where we're going to entertain you today as we educate you. And I have a special guest with me today, but before we go too far and introduce her to you, I want to remind you all that this is episode 203. So if you've missed the last 200 episodes, now you know. And there's so much more to come as we, as I guide you down this road towards health and happiness. And by bringing in these different partners that you can lock arms with, including myself, and where you feel most aligned, don't ever hesitate to reach out and to let us know which questions you have. Reach out to the guest speakers directly. You can reach out to me directly. But, on your path towards health and happiness, there are so many different tools that you can pick up along the way. You see, it is truly all about enjoying the journey. So, with no further ado, I would love to invite our special guest on today for another Heart to Heart. For those that are new, heart to hearts are indeed a video component. And I end up posting this up on my YouTube channel. Sammy ends up sharing some of the visuals on her timelines and her social feeds. And from there, we get to grow and we get to enhance other people's lives in the easiest way possible. So, Sammy, please take some time and introduce yourself.
Hi, Sonia. Thank you so much for the introduction. So my name is Sammy or Samantha, and I'm a holistic nutritionist and intuitive eating coach. So I'm from the UK, as you can probably tell by my accent. So I'm just in Buckinghamshire in London, which is a very nice countrified area of the country. I'm here today to just talk about my journey a little bit and also about how I then bring in my expertise into people's lives to help them to really elevate their health and to achieve their health goals as well.
I love that, elevating their health. That obviously didn't start from where you are today, did it?
No,
You had,
exactly.
yeah. Okay, so walk us through the beginning. Take us at the very beginning of your story and let's go on this journey together and learn a little bit more about Samantha.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess my journey with this particular part of my life really started when I was pretty young, around the age of 8 years old. My swimming coach, I used to be a competitive swimmer, told me that I was fat. And so that sort of comment really was the first time that I ever felt like there was something maybe not quite right with my body, that it was being judged in some way. And I'd never really experienced that before as a child. So yeah, this comment really it didn't start me doing anything different particularly, but it just started this awareness in me of my body and that it didn't look like other people's bodies, and that there was a specific body shape that as a girl, young girl, I was supposed to have. And then throughout my sort of, teens and childhood, I was wearing a swimming costume a lot because I was obviously swimming, and comparing my body to other people's, other women in particular, and feeling very uncomfortable in my body. And it really created this disparity between what my body looked like and what I thought it should look like. And it generated quite a lot of frustration and anger in me. And then as I sort of went into my late teens, in the 90s, it was a time of heroin chic and eating's cheating and all these kind of messaging, lots of diet culture narratives were coming out at that time. And, as a young impressionable teenager, I absorbed some of those. And also my peer group as well, we would sort of skip dinner on Friday nights to go out and feel like we've got flat stomachs. And, it just sort of seemed like normal behavior, really. And then over the next sort of 2 or 3 years, it sort of developed into an eating disorder for me. And it became a very, I guess, secret companion that I would, rely on to keep me balanced and in control, or felt like I was in control. And at the beginning of that period of time, it was when I just left home. So I'd gone to university for the first time, and I'd stopped swimming because I'd had enough of it by then. It had been 10 years of doing that, and I was 19, and I wanted to have my freedom. And I lost a lot of weight really quickly, not even trying. Like, this was before it really kind of, manifested. And people would comment and say, "Oh, you look really great," and all these people were, again, it was this judgment of my body and what it looked like. And that just kind of reinforces that messaging, I think, that, these random people would, come up to you and talk to you about what your body looks like. And, it's sort of like, okay, so if I look like this way, people are going to like me, or they're going to, think I'm attractive or whatever. And I think that just embedded that behavior and those narratives even more for me. And then I lived with that sort of very restrictive behavior. It kind of snowballed into, starving myself and like exercising really intensively to try and sort of like lose more weight, and obsessively weighing myself and checking my body and all those behaviors that, if anybody out there has had disordered eating or an eating disorder, they will be able to recognize. And yeah, it became a prison. It's like it's a mental prison that you are in when you're living like that. And it kind of remained with me for about 20 years. Like, I became very good at hiding it. And, obviously people would ask me, and I'd just be like, "No, I'm fine, I'm fine," sort of thing. And yeah, and it was something that I sort of kept as a really like close companion for many years, until I got to the point where it would kind of come in cycles. So it wasn't like always really, really bad. It was sort of bad for a while, and then it would get better, and then it would go in a cycle. Generally, if I was going through stress or something difficult, it would be worse. And then I was 39, living in Bangkok, and I was having some really big problems with my periods and my menstrual cycle. And it was the first time that I really thought to myself, this is really actually affecting my health now, like quite badly. And as a 39-year-old, I was sort of like thinking, I'm going to be 40 soon. Like, do I want to keep doing this? And I realized that, this sort of behavior was really damaging me. And it was the first time I admitted it to myself. I think that's always the first step with any change, whatever it is in your life, is, we lie to ourselves so much, and we believe it as well. And, this was the first time I kind of realized and admitted that I hadn't done that. So that was the first step. And then I sought help. I went to see like a normal GP, like a general practitioner doctor, and she just tried to kind of give me hormones to get my periods to come back. But I would just didn't want that. I'd stopped taking contraception like years before that, for that reason. And, I didn't want to put synthetic hormones into my body. And so I actually went to see an Ayurvedic doctor. So Ayurvedic medicine is an Indian form of medicine. It's like the old system, sort of around 5,000 years old. So it's based on the body's composition and the different types of foods which help to balance the body out. And the Ayurvedic doctor I went to see, it was the first time anybody'd really sat down with me properly and given me time to talk and, not just look at my physical health, but mental health, emotional health, and all those things as well. And yeah, she gave me a plan of, grounding foods to kind of balance out the, like in Ayurvedic, it's a vata. So it's like the dryness that you have. And then, yeah, within 2 weeks, my period came back. And, it wasn't just like the physical effect of that happening. It was also, I'd had really bad brain fog. My memory had started to get really bad. I was feeling really depressed. Like, I didn't even realize I was feeling like that until I went back into balance. And I was like, God, all of those things were going on, and I didn't even notice, and I didn't know why. And yeah, that was, I was like, why are we not helping people to heal themselves like this? Food is medicine, and we also have the power to do that for ourselves. And I think our current system actually really depowers individuals and makes them think that they have to rely on doctors to fix them. And actually, we have so much power and capacity to do that for ourselves. So that's what started me on this journey, and that became my mission, to help other people to do that, basically.
There's so much there, so much that we talked about. before, like a week ago, when we connected, we surface talked some of this. But
Yeah.
what we didn't discuss is I too was a competitive swimmer.
Okay,
So
nice.
not only that, I taught girls high school swim team. So to be at such an impressionable age, half naked on the poolside with your peers is huge.
Yeah,
It's
absolutely.
huge. And you had mentioned so much of it. Every single part of you is judged. It's not just the movement and the activity and the drills that you're doing. It's the weight that you're carrying and the drag of the swimsuit, or maybe the way your hair is that day. All of these little pieces people might not realize when it comes to, your swimsuit costume, as you guys put it, or maybe why your hair goes up, or why you wear two costumes during the practice, or whatever it might look like for some people. But at the end of the day, the insecurity
Yeah.
probably started there, huh? A big
Yeah,
part of it
absolutely.
started there. And we don't realize how much society is molding us when we're going through that. Like you said, it's not until we've taken a step away and look back do we realize, oh, I was depressed. You don't know that you're depressed when you're going through a depression. You just
No.
know that something's different, something's off, you're not the same, you're not motivated. You suddenly have piles of clutter and you don't understand why you're feeling like you're suffocating.
Yeah.
You just don't understand what you're going through when you're going through it. But once you're on the other side, you can see things differently. And that's what I like about your story. It's not just about you reaching your destination of the version of you that's here in front of us today, but it's how you had to reach the teachings of Eastern medicine and how the grounding food made such an impact that within a short period of times things shifted within, but
Yeah.
nothing would have shifted if you didn't believe it would work. Right? You took action because you believed it was possible.
Yeah, absolutely. That's for sure. Yeah.
And that's so huge because we're not trained to believe that new things are going to work out with the best of us, for the best of us. So talk to us about grounding food and what that looked like for you. Is this something that is different for everybody? Is this something that should be like a foundation for everybody and it's pretty much the same? Go ahead and share that experience with us.
Yeah, so it's in the sort of Eastern philosophy and the Indian philosophy anyway, they talk about three doshas. So these are like basically different components that every single human being is made up of, but we all have them in a different category. So, you might have 30% one, 30% another, and 60% another. You can have lots of different types of combinations of that. So, each individual is different, and I think that's what I really liked about this is that not everybody is treated in the same way. It's like an individualized, personalized approach. So the three doshas are like Pitta, Vata, and Kapha. That's the names of them. And one of them is like Vata is more of like a dryness. Pitta is more of like a strength, and then Kapha is more like oily food. So everybody has those three components in their body, and each person has a tendency to go out of balance in one particular area. So, depending on your composition, so my tendency is to go into a Vata imbalance. So, I'm actually like dominant in Pitta, which is like more of the grounding foods.
Which is
And
the
because
strength.
which is like the grounding strength foods. Yeah. So, if I had, so because I'd gone into a Vata imbalance, those are like the dry foods. So in order to counterbalance that, you have to then eat those grounding foods again to sort of cancel out the dryness. So the dry foods are things like nuts, kind of obvious foods that are crunchy, those like raw vegetables, the seeds and things like that. And also things like chickpeas and those and some like pulses as well. Whereas grounding foods are things like soups, like root vegetables. So you would eat something like a clear broth with sweet potato, white potato, carrots, that kind of stuff. That would be like a grounding food.
So literally from the ground.
Yeah, literally from the ground. Exactly. Yeah. So, and like oats, I would have like porridge oats. She told me to have that in the morning, which I had been having, but she told me to have ghee with it as well, which is like the clarified butter. So it has high vitamin A as well, which is really good. And she helped me, so increasing fat as well, like healthy fats into the diet as part of that.
And that would
And
be the oily food, right?
exactly. Yeah. So bringing that in as well. And so it was balancing out those foods, and she told me to avoid nuts. Don't eat like dried nuts. She said you can have nuts, but you need to soak them beforehand so they become soft. And then have obviously fruits as well are good. And things like crunchy apples not so good, but so sort of stewed fruits like berries and that kind of stuff is fine.
So
So
where do those fall under? Where do the berries fall under?
I think it depends on the different berries, but it's mainly like blueberries and things like that, and strawberries are okay, particularly if they've been cooked as well, so they're kind of warm. And if a food is warm, then it's going to be more grounding. So if a food is cold,
Interesting.
yeah, it's going to be less grounding,
So
basically.
like grilled carrots or sautéed carrots would be more grounding than eating a raw carrot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because the cooking of it shifts the nutritional matrix of the food as well, and changes like the protein and everything in it, so and softens the fiber as well.
So you were saying, so just making sure I've got this wrapped around my head. Crunchy raw vegetables, nuts, chickpeas are the Veda.
Yeah, that's the Vata foods, the sort of drying
Vata,
food. Yeah,
drying foods. And
yeah,
then the Pitta is the grounding foods, soup, root,
yeah.
vegetables.
Exactly.
And then oily food would be, whoa,
So
fats.
any oils and fats, basically. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So those are kind of like the three categories that those different doshas are related to. And so she got me to have less Vata foods and more Pitta foods. And
Very,
that was
very interesting. And
it.
are you to the point now that you can determine based on your energy, your well-being, maybe your cycle, as to what to change, or do you crave certain foods?
I wouldn't say that I crave certain foods. I think I crave food sometimes because I'm hungry. But it's more of a case of, I think when I first went through that process, what she taught me, I was able to identify when my body was going out of balance. Like I could feel some of the symptoms, like I wanted to do a lot of exercise. I could feel this, like, I need to go run it. I need to go and do these exercises. Like that mental, desire is like a sign of a Vata imbalance, being very indecisive. So it's not just a physical thing, it also affects your mental state as well. So being very indecisive about things, like that's also like, if you imagine Vata is like the wind, changeable, like always
Okay.
changing, that's what it reflects in the mind. I would start to want to exercise more and eat less. I knew that I was going into like a Vata imbalance again. And so that was kind of the behavior that my eating disorder would manifest as. And I could identify that and notice it in my own mind and quickly go, okay, I need to, those foods I need to stop having, or have less of them and have more of these foods, have a dal or have some soups and things and lots of oatmeal and things like that. And that would really very quickly bring me back down. And also, you have to do the opposite of what you want to do. Because I wanted to exercise, I wanted to rush about, I wanted to do a million things at once, but I actually had to say no. That's just going to perpetuate that. So once you get into
Okay.
the imbalance, the more you do it, the more that perpetuates the feeling, and you get more out of balance, basically. So actually counterbalancing yourself straight
That's
away.
huge then. Yeah. So that means your awareness, you really can't be in a place of brain fog to be able to notice that. So which one? Okay, so let's talk about, I'm going to use myself as an example. I'm not the only one that craves sweets first thing in the morning. And normally I don't, but this morning I did. So believe it or not, I made two batches because I burnt both. So interesting enough, I made two batches of banana pancakes with cacao and cinnamon. And I ended up burning both batches, but I ate the second batch because I had no more, like I couldn't make it again. So I was craving the sweetness. Now, I thought I wanted the maple syrup, like our pure Canadian maple syrup that goes on top, not the stuff that you buy
I know what you
processed, right?
mean.
So I was craving that syrup. But when it came to having that second batch that I made that of pancakes, I actually chose instead frozen berries that had thawed that I normally like to use in my Greek yogurt with a little bit of crunch, a little bit of granola. But instead, I used it as my topping for my pancake, and the syrup was perfect because it was natural fruit. I got the sugar high without the crash, right? But where would that fall in terms of craving something super sweet?
So like they do say in Ayurvedic medicine that cravings are could be a sign of an imbalance. So, salt craving, sugar craving. I mean, I'm not an expert in Ayurvedic medicine, so I'm not really sure how to answer that question, but it definitely is a sign of an imbalance. And I think, it could also be related to what you've eaten the day before. From a nutritionist perspective, which I am an expert in and I can talk about, is, depending on what you've eaten in like the evening before, what time of day you finished eating, how well you slept overnight, did you do first thing in the morning when you woke up? Like all of these things are going to impact the following day. So, that would be something that I would have to kind of investigate further, really. So, like if you have a sugary snack late at night, like if you ate some chocolate or something, for example,
I did.
That can cause a blood sugar spike and crash, and then you're more likely to crave carbohydrate the next morning as well.
Very see, and I love this. So big picture here is even as a nutritionalist, you went outside the box and brought in resources to work within that you can now add these resources to your clients' different modalities when it comes to healing them, right? You can gear them towards eating more dry foods, but not calling it that. It's not necessarily a macro balance. It's a different type of balance that you can now incorporate to help your clients in this area. It's exactly like me with chakra work. When I'm listening to what you're saying, I am 90% sure the grounding falls. Actually, I need to double check because I originally thought it eating grounding vegetables had to do with your root, but when I learned about it with soups and smoothies, once they get in that platform, like in that area, take your vegetable and you make a super smoothie, it now falls under your throat chakra, believe it or not. So once you work with it, it changes. So it's one of those two chakras. So for me, the underlining is chakra work for everything. And that even when it comes to my nutrition and movement. And for you, it's the three doshas that play a role. And it is absolutely imperative that we don't just look at the moment. When I say this morning I had a sugar craving and I normally don't, well, I normally don't eat an apple crisp last night, but we were trying to finish it off so we didn't waste it. My mom had baked one and came over with it. So yeah, when as soon as you said that, I'm like, I rarely eat dessert at night. I save it for like the one time a week where it's really good. My husband eats a butter tart right beside me every night, and I can watch him do it, no problem. I always tell myself I can make a smoothie. I can make it thick and eat it in a bowl. I can do these healthy snacks like the Twix. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's like the healthy Twix. You take a prune and roll it out. Sorry, a date and roll it out, and then you add peanut butter or nut butter,
And
and
also dark chocolate. That's what I add as well.
well, I was gonna say, and then you freeze it and add some dark chocolate and eat it, and it tastes like a Twix. I mean, there's treats I'm trying to keep handy. But the biggest takeaway I want our audience to know is in most cases, you can't throw one piece of information out there and expect a solution.
No,
It's a lot
exactly.
more complicated than that. It's a lot more complicated than that.
And I think
So,
that's probably one of the biggest problems in the nutrition world is everybody is looking for that one rule that is going to change their lives and make them feel the best they've ever felt. And, this idea of like one size fits all, like it just cannot work in nutrition because number one, nutrition is so nuanced anyway. Like there's so many different kind of layers to it. Secondly, we don't know that much really. Like in comparison to things like cardiovascular disease, which we know a lot about, actually nutrition is quite a new area of science, and it's very difficult to test it on humans because humans are, by their nature, changeable animals, and they don't necessarily stick to things and, all that sort of stuff. So I think, what you need to do is find the things that work for your body and make you feel good. And there are so many different ways that you can do that. And another thing I just wanted to respond to that you said is about, that health, it's not like, it's not just one thing, it's this holistic thing. And I actually did an event a few days ago with a doctor, and he's also very much in this view of health as being holistic. And, we have to look at our physical health, of course. We have to look at our mental health. We have to look at our emotional health. And, these things can come into us in many different ways. You're talking about the chakras. I'm a yoga teacher, and also I work with like intuitive eating, which is all about mindset. Because if you want to make a change to your diet and your health, like you can follow a meal plan, great, but if you don't change your mindset, you're never going to be able to make that change and sustain it. So, it has to be this like big view of health. You have to look at sleep, how you're breathing, like what your spiritual kind of what life is like as well, because that can be very important for many people, whether it's religion or something else. And yeah, and exercise and movement, it's really, really important. So
And one more component I want to stress actually weighs so much more than everything else, and that is literally stress. Think of where you're at in this time and space. If you're not at a capacity to, if you're at a capacity where you can only do so much, honor that, but still do it. Every single thing that you talked about plays a huge part, not a minor part, a huge part. If you're not sleeping 8 hours a night, you got to fix that first. These aren't, drinking more water isn't the solution to everything. It's going to help with quite a bit, but
That's a silver bullet. That's not going to work.
it's going to distract you a little bit from all those bathroom visits, and it's not, it's going to fill a minor void. But I used to say, so I love that you'd said brought this back to mindset. I used to always say, I could personal train a client 3 times a week, and they can go home and emotionally eat and come back and tell, because their life sucks, their business sucks, their job sucks, their partner sucks, their life sucks, and so they're emotionally eating. Of course, they're playing the victim and not the victor in this moment, but that's life, that's real, that happens too. We can't be ignorant with the fact that we're always the victor. There are moments where we slip. And when we're in that space, it's not a matter of doing all of the things. It's a matter of honoring where you're at. So when it comes to being back in balance, when it comes to naturally putting yourself back on track when you don't realize that you're off track, what are some recommendations that you would like to give as an overall blanket without laser pointing focus, but a blanket of area for people to take a look at if they want to start making some micro changes, because that's all they
Yeah,
have.
so I guess one of the places to start with nutrition would be ultra processed food. And I know that in like Canada and America, it's a big topic, and it is over here as well in the UK. It's suddenly becoming this trend in nutrition that everybody's now talking about because of the known health implications of diets that are high in ultra processed food. And so that would be the first step, is to ask yourself honestly, and that's the hard bit because we lie to ourselves, like I said earlier, like how much ultra processed food are you consuming on a daily basis? You could even go so far as to keep a journal, a food journal. Because actually, we often, again, lie to ourselves about what we're eating. We think, oh, yeah, my diet's pretty healthy. And the number of clients that I start working with that say that to me, and then I ask them to keep a food diary for 3 days, and we go through it together, and they're like, oh, wow, yeah. And it can be really quite confronting to do that. And it can be a bit of a slap in the face, but it's better to know the reality. And then you can, with that knowledge, you can then make changes from a place of understanding. So that's probably one of the places that I would start, just to see what are you eating? Like, if you're, I work a lot with people who are living with, metabolic syndrome. So that's kind of an area of specialism for me. So type 2 diabetes, obesity, high blood pressure, high triglycerides, these symptoms generally all come together. And if somebody has three or more of those, they're classed as having metabolic syndrome, or syndrome X, it's also called as well. And yeah, I think that, like, understanding the kind of the role of nutrition in those is really important. And it's kind of cutting out those ultra processed foods first is definitely the way forward with that.
And a simple way of doing that is exactly what you said, journaling. It doesn't have to be complicated. You don't need to use an app. You can literally write things down. I would love for you to go a step further for anybody who's deciding to take this task on. And I want you to identify on a scale of 1 to 10 how you feel.
As in,
As in, after you've eaten that ultra processed food, that Kraft dinner for lunch, or that can of something, because it's easy. Now, there are some things that are an exception. A can of tuna is not an ultra processed food, right? A can of black olives is not an ultra processed food. But
yeah, of
sometimes
course,
they're
like,
found. That's where they're found, right? They're found not at the perimeter, but they're sometimes found within the aisles. And same thing with chickpeas. So I'm just throwing some examples out there. I want our listeners, because they could be anywhere across the gamut. Some of them could be nutritionists like us. Some of them could be brand new and just tripping over this episode, and they've come across it. And we're not talking about macronutrients here. We're literally talking about being aware of what you're putting in your body. And the next step, or for me, once you're aware, okay, I ate 2 cookies for breakfast. Of course, that's why I craved pancakes. Of course, that's why it's going to be an uphill battle for the rest of the day for sugar, unless I release it and get a dopamine hit in a different area. Now, not everybody's going to think like that. I'm just using an example. But that's where you become aware of who you are and what you're like and what you're missing. And then you can do exercise for that next piece instead of dark chocolate, or I can't find dark chocolate, so I'm just gonna eat whatever chocolate I can get my hands on kind of moment.
I think it's important to maybe just explain what an ultra processed food is,
Please
so
go
just
ahead. Yes.
people can kind of make sure that they know what that means, because there's a big difference between a processed food, like a medium processed food, and an ultra processed food. So there's basically four categories. So there's low, medium, high, and ultra. And what ultra means is that it contains one or more ingredients that you wouldn't find in a normal kitchen. So, like, if you read the ingredients list and there's a chemical in there that you don't recognize, or an E number, then generally that is classed as an ultra processed food. So things like chickpeas, I mean, they're just chickpeas that have been put in a tin. Yes, they've been processed, but they've been, boiled. They've been put in a tin with some water, and they've been preserved. So that is not ultra processed. That's medium processing. No food is not processed. All food we eat is processed. A carrot that you take out of your own garden is processed by picking it, washing it, and chopping it up. That's processing it. That's classed as processing. It's low processing, but it's not ultra or high. So I think, we're bombarded with foods which are covered in shiny packets, full of, health claims, and, all this information brightly colored. Like, if a food has that on it, it's probably not good for you. You don't need to put on a banana, this banana will give you potassium, because It's just a banana and it has a packet on it already, you know? So most of these ultra processed foods, they have to be shiny and colorful to catch your eye, because if you saw them on the shelf in their natural state, you'd probably go, "What is that brown thing?" You know, you wouldn't go, "Oh, that looks delightful. I really want to eat that," you know? So I think that's a really important point to note, so people understand that.
And I love that you expanded on that, Sammy, because there's a point that you brought up that I completely forgot about. Two of my closest friends, are from Holland and spent time in England. So here we do not have E numbers. So they had explained to me that there was numbers on packaging, numbers everywhere. Ever since childhood, they were able to identify things based on E numbers, and we just don't have that here in Canada. We don't have that in the States. Which I believe is amazing because look at the worldly stats in terms of diabetes and chronic health care, the way it's literally inflamed without that knowledge. It's just another powerful way of identifying the health of a food, the vitality of a food. For those that aren't familiar with what an E number is, it really spells out the, well, you explained us. Give us the proper definition of an E number, do you know?
Well, God, I mean, I would just say that an E number is like a code that's been given to a particular chemical that has a particular function in a food. So it could be a coloring, for example. It could be like an emulsifier or something like that. And they use the number, the code, instead of putting the full name of it. However, I think they now have to put the full name of it. I'm not 100% sure, but I think they do now, in this country anyway. I'm not sure about other places, but yeah.
So be mindful with what you're eating. And when it comes to making the next step, that first change, once they're mindful with what they're eating, what do you recommend? Do you
Well, I
recommend
think
at that point they go see somebody?
I think it depends on what the health concern is, I would say. You know, when I work with somebody, I that's like not the first thing that I would do with them. Like, I get them to do the diet diary for sure, and I will go through, you know, their sort of blood work and their current sort of health situation, and then depending on what they want to achieve. You know, some people want to stop taking metformin because they don't want diabetes anymore. Some people want to lose weight. Some people want to stop having fatty liver disease. You know, there's various different things, and depending on what that person wants, it will like guide the advice. I would definitely say to somebody, if they know that they're living with a metabolic condition or hormonal imbalance or anything that is kind of causing them to feel, you know, the symptoms I described earlier, like brain fog, you know, weight gain around the middle, like fatigue, chronic fatigue, pain in their joints, inflammation, all those things, then I would absolutely advise to go and get advice from a professional. I mean, I don't know what it's like in Canada, but in the UK, you know, most of us offer like a full a free consultation at the beginning. So it's like a sort of 45-minute call just to kind of find out what that person's issues are, and you know, if you can help them, because we can't help everybody, right? You know, we want to help everybody, but some people, you know, it's not your area of specialism, so I have to kind of refer them on. But we can make a plan and help somebody.
I totally agree, and I too offer the consultation at no charge to get to know somebody. Because for me, if I'm going to be working with somebody when it comes to their diet, if that's how we start working together, we end up spending more time on mindset, which I'm sure you do as well based on our conversation. Of course, there's tweaks in the diet, but those tweaks can't happen if the person's not ready, and we can't have that conversation about mindset. Or have them be honest with us. Because like you said, if they're not honest with themselves, they're not honest with their coach. If there is no connection at the very beginning, it won't work for either party. So I believe that's another thing that needs to be discovered on that discovery call is there any kind of connection between coach and client? For me, there needs to be. That way there we can work together. If not, you know, like you said, you pass them on. There are different practitioners. So, for instance, if somebody knocked on my door and they are not interested in trying anything different than what status quo is. So if I mention chakras or different foods and I use different language and they're offended by that, they're not going to be the right person. And I truly believe finding that fit is critical. Because you go so deep and personal when it comes to unpacking why you really eat what you eat. When it comes to unpacking what it felt like to be in a swimsuit at 13 to 19 or 39, or, I was competing in triathlons in my late 30s, I guess, is when I started. And I was back in a swimsuit again in front of a whole bunch of strangers. Sure, you're doing a triathlon, but not everybody's the same shape and size. I just have to throw that out there. And I'm going to take that to the next level is when I was running, my body shifted so much. I don't have a typical runner's body. I have curves, I have girls, and it didn't matter how much I was running, I still wasn't losing my shape or my structure. But I didn't look like everybody else. And that mindset trick plays a big game on you when it comes to the outside looking in or the inside looking out. And you had mentioned that in different words when it came to, the structure of the swimsuit, the comments, whether or not they were true, you believed them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I
Right?
think at
And
the age of 8, you think you listen to adults in positions of authority and you believe what they say generally. You know,
right.
you don't know any better at that age. So those kind of things stick with you. And then, but then it's also the perpetuating narratives that you then like develop in your own mind around those things because it's what you've heard. You know, conditioning is such a powerful thing. And that's one of the things that I work hard with my clients to unpick is where has the conditioning come from that has caused them to eat so in such a way that they're now in this state of health? Because I work with dietary related diseases. You know, the people come to me that have got diseases related to diet because of the way they've eaten. And a lot of actually the root cause of most of that is emotional eating, you know, because people don't know how to deal with their emotions. They don't know how to manage stress in another way. They, like food is easy. Food is something that's comforting and it gives you a quick, you know, a quick feeling of satisfaction, you know. But if you're using that as the only mechanism to cope with stress and you're doing that for years and years and years, eventually you end up, you know, and one client of mine I can think of had type 2 diabetes and obesity because of that, because of stress eating, because he would leave work, he'd drive to the garage. He'd buy a load of sweets and chocolate. He'd eat it on the way home. And so by the time he got home, he'd, you know, finished it. So it was like secretly stress eating. And over many, many years, he kept doing that every day. And eventually he became really unwell. So we have to kind of like, you know, tackle the root cause, which is what I really love to focus on. And I think the root cause is not food. The root cause is conditioning and emotions and how we cope with that and how we cope with life.
Well said. Well said. And I want to echo that to the point where, sorry, he never barks and he's barked a couple of times today. So
Okay.
my
Didn't
family
hear
walks in, so I'm not too worried, but strangers should go away. But my family, my kids, my mom, it doesn't matter. They all just, we're pretty close. They all just walk in. I open the door in the mornings
really.
when I'm ready. So sometimes it's like, "Hi, mom, I'm on a show," and she'll be like, "Oh, hi, everybody." When I used to teach fitness classes in my basement, sometimes I think I'd hear a sound, and it was my mom coming down the stairs, joining class for 20 seconds or for a minute, and be like, "I'm done. Keep up the good work," and then she would leave. The mindset piece. So one piece I want to bring up. Well, there's two things I want to bring up. I'm just searching for the right words in my head here. And this is what happens, right? When we have that sugar, sure, I went for natural sugar, but I still had sugar this morning. And I typically don't. It doesn't look like this. It does increase brain fog, it does react and hit you differently. But when you said emotional eating, here's the part I wanted to share. What you do in one part of your life, you do in multiple parts of your life. So if you're an emotional eater, take a look at your bank account. You are likely an emotional spender. You are likely an emotional shopper. You are likely repeating these patterns in other areas of your life that you are not aware of. The second thing I want to say when it comes to the dopamine hits, and I've been talking about this a lot lately because it's super important. Those with ADHD, any kind of neurodivergencies, those who are going through feminine hormones, not just your monthly cycle, but maybe your perimenopause or your menopause phase, those are where I'm focusing on both the neurodivergencies and the menopause phase, and women that fall into both categories. Menopause makes you drop in estrogen. When you drop in estrogen, you have even less dopamine than normal. However, if you are neurodivergent as well, you also lack dopamine, which means you are at a greater risk of searching for that high over and over and over again. And you might not realize it. Now you might be able to be like, oh, that's why. And it's not. It actually makes what you eat even that much more important. It makes the structure and the schedule and being prepared that much more important. It makes that diet diary almost necessary. Like, not just an option, but necessary. And because here's why, and it's just like somebody who's on metformin who's a diabetic, you don't want this at all. For anybody that's listening only and not catching the video, I'm actually making like waves with my hand. You don't want that, and you certainly don't want the high peaks and valleys, which is what you're getting now. You're actually looking for a bit more of a flat line. I mean, of course, it can have some bumps in it, but the point is, you don't want those high peaks and valleys when it comes for chasing that sugar high. The more you can maintain it and keep it status quo, the less you're dealing with those cravings, and you can put that energy elsewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I think it's really interesting that you're working with people like that, because that's quite a, it's, well, perimenopause and menopause seem to have become much more talked about topics over the last few months, I would say. And also like neurodivergence as well. That's a really interesting area.
It's very interesting. I self-diagnosed over the summer once I, and I'm 52. I think I was 51 when I think it was right around my birthday before I turned. And I connected a lot of dots for me. And where I self-diagnosed is, I mean, for those that know me, know I'm a big geek. I've done the research. And the connection for me was all three of my kids had been diagnosed with it within the last couple of years. And my grandson was who's 5 was recently diagnosed with it. And when I'm looking at, I swear my grandson is a, for me, he feels like he's an imitated image of my father at 5. And I can't pinpoint it. I can't tell anybody why, but I feel this is what my dad would have been like at 5. And my dad is now 79. So my dad and Hudson act a lot alike. They interrupt, they is more than just that. Like, it's weaponized incompetence. Like, there's a list of things, but they don't do the growth like I do, right? He's 5 and the other one's 79. He doesn't care. But they're identical in so many ways. And when I was able to take a bird's eye view, it connected the dots for me. You see, I learned French immersion at the same time I learned English. My mornings were in French, my afternoons were in English, or other way around. If I took history in French 1 year, I took the next level the next year in English. I always thought the only reason I mixed up my G's, J's, D's, P's, I's, E's was just because of French, like learning the two languages. But I still do it now, and I do it with different things that are not I's, E's, J's, and D's. So I had somebody tell me, my guidance counselor, when I was thinking of post-secondary, my guidance counselor always said to me, or had said to me, oh, you're not smart enough to go to university. I saw that reaction, Sammy. You're like, whoa, that's a big step. And now that I can look back, I can understand why. If I wasn't rated on dyslexia or having ADHD and it showing up, if you took that piece out and just marked me for what I put on paper, which they didn't do then, would my results have been significantly different? And I bet you they would have been, because as an adult, I'm able to self-study and get completely different grades than what I got as a child. I actually thought going into this world that I wasn't smart enough. For a long time, I wasn't smart enough. I married a narcissist, I married a teacher. They both thought they were better than me because subconsciously, I thought I wasn't good enough because somebody told me that. Going on a diet when I was 12 because my mom thought I was big had an impact, right? Being judged every time you get dressed, whether or not you look good or fit or trim or whatever, has an impact. And so, yes, people with neurodivergencies learn differently.
Yeah, for
And that's
sure.
it. And that's it. You know, we hear a lot, I told you so, or you need to settle down, or you need to focus a little bit more. Those things don't work. So how can I tune into it? We learn differently. We now crave food differently.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean,
Right?
we all relate to food in a completely unique way,
Yeah.
depending on all of the experiences we've had throughout our lives, not just conditioning, but what we've seen, what we've experienced, what we've watched our friends do, like it all adds up, doesn't it? So yeah, it's a
It
really kind of
does.
complex thing, but change is really is possible. I think one of the things when I started my eating disorder recovery journey was, I was reading all this stuff and it was like, yeah, you can recover, but not sure if you can, like, can anybody really? And I think you can. I think you can, change your brain. Our brains are plastic. We can create new connections, new neural pathways in our brain, which enable us to bypass old destructive behaviors that we don't want anymore. And I think that's also a really empowering thing for people to know, is that if you know that there's something that you're doing that is creating poor health outcome or something that's not making you feel good, then you can change that. It does take time and it does take hard work and consistency, and you have to be dedicated to it. And your brain is going to sabotage you through that process as well. Your ego doesn't like change, so it tries to bring you back into the old habit patterns. But I've seen it with all my clients that they are able to create change in their lives, and it is the most empowering thing that you can do for yourself. And the other side of that is completely like a new life, actually. And that's how I feel like I now live. I'm now free of all those kind of behaviors and destructive thought patterns that I used to have around food. And I'm now in a place where I'm able to help other people. Like I used to be a teacher, actually. I used to be a science teacher before I became a nutritionist. And I knew that if I wanted to be a nutritionist to help other people, I needed to be from a place of health in my own mind. It wasn't just physical health, it's my mental health as well. So I went through that recovery journey before I became a nutritionist. And that's what's enabled me now to help other people that are in a difficult place, because I understand that. Like I've been through that myself. And, that's the best way to understand and help others.
I was just going to say that's the only way to really help others is, the best way you can guide them is by holding their hand as you stand forward and walk through the experience with them. And that's exactly what a good coach does. They nurture, they lead, they guide, but they don't sit there and preach and tell you what to do. They give you options and they help you decide. Sammy, is there anything else that you want to add before? I mean, I'm realizing the time. I said to you I would be mindful, but it's getting close. So please, is there anything else you want to share as we sign off today?
I guess I would just like to say to people, if they would like to learn more about what I do or get in contact with me, then they can contact me on my website, which is www.naturalnut.co.uk, or follow me on Instagram, which is at natural.nut underscore. I'm also on LinkedIn, Samantha JR Williams, and like I said earlier, I offer a free consultation. So if anybody's interested in just having a chat with me to find out, what they can do and how I can help them, then please reach out. And it's
Awesome, Sammy.
never too late to make a start. You can start at any time in your life.
It's never too late to make a start. I completely agree. And if you are ready to start something, here's the promise that you need to make to yourself. Do one small thing today. Don't wait till tomorrow, because then you're not truly ready. If you're ready to make a start, but you want to push it off to tomorrow or Monday, you're not truly ready. You have time today to either diarize what you've eaten, to listen to an engaging podcast like this, to write down what it is that you want. You can do something today to start your journey. I'm going to have all of Sammy's contact information in my show notes, guys. Sammy, thank you so much for being such a beautiful guest on today's show. I loved what we talked about, and I know our audience will as well. I wanted to, we'll see. We'll see where things go. It might be nice to have you back on as a guest to
Yeah, no.
see what's next as a part two, but let's give it time. Let's put this one out. Sending you so much love, and thank you.
Thank you, Sonia. It's been a pleasure. Bye, guys.